मुकं करोति वाचालं पंगुं लंघयति गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवम्। I bow down to Krishna, the embodiment of supreme bliss, through whose grace the lame scale mountains and the dumb become eloquent. May Krishna be the guide of our lives. Om Shantihi, Shantihi, Shantihi. Peace. Give me your watch. भगवद गीता 15th चैप्टर पुरुषोत्तम योग चैप्टर ऑन द सुप्रीम सेल्फ। अकॉर्डिंग टू शंकर एंड अदर कमेंटेटर्स दिस 15th चैप्टर ऑफ द भगवद गीता इज द क्विंटेसेंस ऑफ द गीता। कृष्णा मेंशन्ड इन द लास्ट पार्ट ऑफ द 15th चैप्टर इति गुह्यतमं शास्त्रं इदं उक्तं मया नघ। हे अर्जुन, आई एम टेलिंग यू द गुह्यतमं द सीक्रेट द मोस्ट सीक्रेट एस्पेक्ट ऑफ द स्क्रिप्चर्स। नाउ इन द 9th चैप्टर कृष्णा मेंशन राजविद्यां राजगुह्यम्। I am going to tell you the secret of yoga. In the 18th chapter also, Krishna mentioned, Sarva guhyatamam bhuyah shrinume paramam vacha. Oh Arjuna, let me repeat again that supreme secret of my teachings to you. So this word, secret, he used three times in the whole Bhagavad Gita. First in the 9th chapter, second again in the 15th chapter, and last in the 18th chapter. You see, the person whom you love, you want to unveil the secret things to him or her. So Krishna loved Arjuna, so he wanted to tell the secret, the quintessence of his teaching. It is quite natural that human beings forget time to time. So Krishna again repeated the same thing in the 18th chapter. Which is the secret thing? That we read in the last verse, I think last verse of the 14th chapter of the Gita. Manmana bhava mad bhaktu. Not 14, I think in the 9th chapter. Ninth chapter. Manmana bhava mad bhakta mad yaji mang namaskuru mame vashyasi. Means, be my devotee, worship me, salute me, bow down me, to me, you will reach me. That is the secret. There is one verse in the 12th chapter also I like very much. मयैव मन आधत्स मयि बुद्धिं निवेशय निवेशिष्यसि मयैव अत ऊर्ध्वं न संशय। इज कृष्ण इज प्रॉमिसिंग टू अर्जुन, पुट योर माइंड इन मी देन होल्ड इट विद योर इंटेलेक्ट, डोंट गेट अवे फ्रॉम मी, होल्ड इट थ्रू द इंटेलेक्ट। मामेव इष्यसि देन यू विल रीच मी, यू विल लीव इन मी। अत ऊर्धम नाश संशय, डोंट डाउट अबाउट इट। ही इज रीअश्योरिंग अर्जुन, इफ योर माइंड इन मी यू लिव इन मी, डोंट डाउट अबाउट इट। इट इज गॉड्स ओन वर्ड्स बट वी फॉरगेट। कृष्ण सेज इति गुह्यतमम, इति मीन्स हियर एंड्स। द वर्ड इति जनरली वी राइट इन अवर लेटर, इति चेतनानंद माने योर्स एटसेट्रा चेतनानंद। इति कृष्ण हियर मेंशन इति, डज इट मीन दैट हियर ही इज कंक्लूडिंग द गीता स्क्रिप्चर? नो,
here he is concluding his scripture, the secret scripture, in a nutshell. You see, 15th chapter is not the end of the Bhagavad Gita. It will continue till the 18th chapter. So here, iti guishutamam shastram. The secret of the scripture, let me tell you here. I have talked to you till the 14th chapter in a question and answer form. Now I shall sum up what I have said to you in this 15th chapter. You see, in the 14th chapter, we read about the three gunas. How to transcend those three gunas. And what are the signs of a person who has transcended the three gunas, means illumined soul, deva-free souls. That Krishna already narrated. Well, if I transcend the gunas, what will happen? You will reach me. You will attain God. That is Krishna's intention to speak in this 15th chapter.
Shri Bhagavan Uvaja, Urdhamulam Adhashakam Ashvattham Prahurabhyam Chandamsi Yesya Pranani Yastam Veda Savedavit.
Shri Krishna says, sages speak of the immutable Ashvattha tree, the tree of life, with its taproot above and its branches below. On this tree grow the scriptures. Seeing their source, one knows their essence.
Urdhamulam. It is a very mysterious tree. You see, Krishna is trying to give an analogy of this cosmos, this universe, this world, through a tree. This tree is a very mysterious tree. Generally, we see the trees, their roots are in the ground and branches above. But this tree is just the reverse. Its root above, the branches, leaves, trunk, all are downwards. Sri Ramakrishna used to say, Shigharer ulto chabi. Generally, we go to our home to turn the key in a clockwise, this way. But if you want to enter the door of God, you will have to turn the key the opposite direction, just opposite way. So this tree is a mysterious tree. Urdha mulam, mul means shaka, root, is above. Adha shakam, the branches, below. What is the name of this tree? Ashvattham. A means not. Shva means tomorrow. Tha means exist. Such a tree which does not exist tomorrow means non-eternal. This whole world, whatever you see, is not eternal.
Abhayam prahu. Prahu means the wise people call it abhayam, undecaying.
This tree is eternal. What, Swami, you are confusing. Non-eternal, eternal, what do you mean? This tree is the Shakti of Brahman. Brahman is eternal, so his Shakti is eternal. But Shakti sometimes manifests, sometimes does not manifest. In that respect, it is non-eternal. Shakti is not always manifested. It is anadi, without beginning, but not ananta, but not infinite. I am talking about Maya. It goes like a wave form. Ocean is always eternal, but the wave is not eternal. A particular wave rises and it declines. It vanishes, rises, again vanishes, rises, again vanishes. So these waves are not, you are a wave, I am a wave. Christ was a wave, Buddha was a wave in the ocean of Satchidananda. So each human being is a wave. It is rising and falling, rising and falling. We are one with the ocean. Try to imagine that way. That you are that infinite Brahman, infinite ocean. But took a name and form and took a form of wave. Whereas that wave will last 70 years, 80 years, 90 years, 100 years. But again that wave will disappear.
that wave is not eternal. Prahu abhayam. But at the same time, this wave, you see, a wave goes down, again that same wave will rise. If you watch carefully, sitting near the ocean, you will find huge tidal wave is coming. It dashes on the shore, again, whoosh, the water goes down. Again, perhaps from half a mile away, this water is recycling near the coast. Continuously, the same wave is coming again and again, again and again. It is an amazing phenomenon. So we are continuously recycling in this world. Channam se yasya parnani parna. Parna means leaves. Channam se, the Vedas. The scriptures, this mysterious tree, it has leaves. The Vedas are its leaves. Ved, ya, tam Veda, he who knows him in the know it this way, he is the real knower. Now, let me tell you what is in Krishna's mind. Krishna was thinking about the welfare of Arjuna, that he was in the world. He is the ruler of a big kingdom. He has wife, children. He has family responsibilities. You will have to protect religion, dharma. You will have to fight for the truth. At the same time, you will have to attain the highest. So Krishna is telling Arjuna the secret of human life. Look, without knowledge or devotion, you cannot attain the highest. Do you know how to attain knowledge and devotion? You will have to practice detachment. So here he is going to give that instruction on detachment, how to practice detachment. You see, it is very easy to be attached, but it is an extremely difficult thing to be detached. Attachment brings pain, detachment brings happiness. So Krishna does not want that his beloved devotee should be attached and suffer. So here Krishna is going to give him an instruction on detachment through this analogy of the tree. All human beings are in the domain of the gunas. There are three gunas, I told you. Sattva, goodness, rajas, activity, restlessness, tamas, dullness, inertia. All human beings are within these three gunas. Those three gunas dwell within us. One of the commentators pointed out that the Ramayana, the entire Ramayana is within us. Rama represents God, Supreme Self, who is possessed by the three gunas, our individual self, covered by three gunas. First guna is tamas, kumbhakarna, which is the symbol of tamas, then Ravana, symbol of rajas, and Vibhishana, sattva. So these three brothers are within this body. Our tamasic nature forces us to sleep, to be dull, to be lazy. Our rajasic nature forces us to be active, to be restless. These two natures are very destructive. Sattvic nature is constructive. The Vibhishana, what does it do? He defected. He left his two brothers and joined Ravana's party. When the war began, Vibhishana said, "Brother, I cannot take your side because you are untruthful, you are fighting for unrighteousness. But Rama is the truth, I shall hold the truth." So Vibhishana left his two brothers and joined with Rama. So that thing is going on inside us, that war between the gunas. Sattva guna is fighting with rajas and tamas.
constructive force is fighting against the destructive force that you find in the society. It is very symbolic. Eknath commented on this verse. This image of the tree of life is one of the most significant in the Gita. Most of this tree is not physical. The whole phenomenal universe, matter, energy and mind, is only its canopy of leaves. This is all we can see. But each leaf grows from a twig, which grows from a branch, which in turn grows from a vast trunk. And supporting the trunk and all its leaves and twigs and branches, completely hidden, is the tap root, extending deep into pure being. Farthest from the root is the world of multiplicity and change, countless like leaves. But the taproot of this tree is the Lord, the eternal, changeless Self. The application of this tremendous image is personal and practical. As long as we live on the surface of life, we believe we are separate, individual leaves. We lead private lives and bear no relation to the rest of the tree, even though when we are cut off from that tree, we have no life. Look at the problems that face the world today because of this crude superstition that we are separate. We have violence in our streets and homes because individuals value no one's welfare but their own. We have poverty and war around the globe because nations and corporations pursue private aims without regard to the cost to others. Most poignantly of all, we see men, women, and even children cutting themselves off from others around them so they can pursue what they want without hindrance. When we are driven by the self-will like this, we cannot imagine we are forfeiting the whole of life for the little leaf we call our individual personality. So, when you get up in the morning while you are at work, before going to bed, or whenever you feel ruled by private passions, remind yourself of this magnificent simile, which asks us to claim the whole tree of life and not be content with being one passing leaf. When we put water at the root of the tree, that water goes all over the body, all over the leaves. Every leaf gets the sap from the root. So instead of giving water on the leaf, it is better to give water on the root. What does it mean? It means tasmin tuṣṭe jagat tuṣṭam. Love God. Satisfy Him. Then all beings will be satisfied. Forgetting God, if you try to please people, you will be miserable. Sri Ramakrishna used to say, if you do 99 good to a man and one bad, he will forget the 99 ones, he will remember only the bad one. Human beings are so ungrateful. With only the bad one, he will remember. God is just the opposite. You do 99 bad, one good, he will remember the good one. Because his mind is full of goodness. He cannot see the bad thing. Whatever you have inside, that you project outside. It is true. Swamiji, when I read Swamiji's Gyano Yoga, that one small story, I shall never forget. What is inside, that is outside, I did not understand in the very beginning. This Swamiji told an analogy. Here is a little child, 2 or 3 years old. The mother left that child in the bedroom and her jewelry and other things are in the drawer. A thief entered the room, took away the entire jewelry, money, everything. The child did not cry or did not shout. As thief, thief, thief. Because the conception of thief is not in his mind.
He has no conception of the thief. If he had conception of the thief, he would cry out, "Chor, chor, thief, thief." That analogy struck in my mind, that what is inside, that is outside. A person sees passion, wicked all around, wickedness in his mind. It is an amazing thing. We are projecting ourselves outside continuously. With that little story, that little child and the thief, and mother's jewelry, that struck me. Adascha urdham prasitastasya shakha guna pravriddha vishaya prabalaha adascha mulani anusantatani karmani bandhini manushyaloke. Krishna says, nourished by the gunas, the limbs of this tree spread above and below. Sense objects grow on the limbs as buds. The roots hanging down bind us to action in this world. Adascha urjam urdham prasitastasya shakha tasya shakha, meaning the branches of that tree goes up and down. Some branches go up and some branches go down. Prasita, it just spreads that way. You can check your tree. Guna pravriddha, who nourishes that tree? Guna, with three gunas. Sattva, Rajas, Tamas. They carry the food, nourishment, light, water, fertilizer. All these things are gunas. They help to grow, to make the tree vigorous, lively, vibrant. Vishaya prabala. Prabala, pallav. Pallav means twigs. Vishaya, sense object. Shabda, asparsha, rupa, rasa, gandha. Shabda means sound. Sparsha means touch. Rupa means sight. Rasa means taste. And gandha means fragrance. These five elements are the twigs of that tree. Adasya mulani anusantatani. Mulani anusantatani. Adasya. Ada means lower, mulani, mul, means the desires, vasana rup mul nimne, the root. Now he is talking about from individualist standpoint, your root is connected with desire, so which is, the root is very strong, it is very difficult to uproot the desires that he is talking about. Vashanarumuni, upari anushita, some roots also are above. Karmanu gandhini manushyaloka. Manushyaloka means in this world of human beings. Human beings are tied with karma, good and bad. We are all tied by our own karmas. Karmai bandha. And I explained to you how this karma starts, avidya, kama, karma, ignorance, desire, action, ignorance, desire, action, ignorance, desire, action. We are constantly rotating in that wheel of karma, non-stop. 60 years, 70 years, 80 years, 19 years, 90 years, 100 years, we are constantly rotating. Ignorance, desire, action. Why do you work? Because you have desire. Why do you have desire? Because you are ignorant. A wheel, Vedanta will stop. Because you have no rest. You have no peace. Because you are rotating in this wheel of karma, Vedanta wants to stop that. How? Krishna is going to tell us. Asanga shastrena dhidhina chitva. Take these acts of non-attachment and chop them off. Use your self-effort. O Arjuna. That he will tell us in the next verse. In the previous verse also, Krishna says about shakha, branches. That shakha is Hiranyagarbha. Again, let me bring whole Vedanta to you. Here is Brahman, cosmic consciousness, formless, qualityless, devoid of everything. Then comes Ishvara, same cosmic consciousness with Shakti, with power, with three gunas. Come another stage, Hiranyagarbha, some total of causal subtle bodies. Then comes Virat, some total of the gross body. Here is Brahman, which is above everything. Sat Chidananda, existence, consciousness, bliss. Then comes Ishvara, God. Brahman with qualities. That is called God. He is the sum total of all causal bodies. We reach there every night in deep sleep. Come next stage, Hiranyagarbha. Sum total of the subtle bodies. Then come Virat. Subtle body means mind, intellect, all those things. Then come Virat, sum total of gross bodies. That is all these physical bodies. So all these four things are connected. Similarly, individual beings. Look, here is Atman, pure consciousness. The next stage is called Prajna. It is a technical word, Prajna. Means at that time, you are in the causal stage, in dreamless sleep. Then comes Tvayasa, which is also a technical word. Individual subtle body. Then Virat, individual gross body. Gross body, subtle body, causal body, beyond cause. As you see it in the cosmic way, then you can connect it with individual way. So Krishna says, "Hey Shakha, this is a mysterious tree. You, myself, we are all different leaves of the same tree." You know, when a person experiences this cosmic consciousness, he cannot hate, he cannot quarrel, he cannot fight with anybody. He becomes fearless. He becomes free from grief, free from competition, free from everything. Fear comes when you separate yourself. When you unite, there is no fear. You will have to unite yourself with God. You will be fearless. When the children grab the child, grabs his mother or her mother, "I have no fear. My mother will protect me." The moment we are stay away from the mother, we are fearful. Who will protect me? The tree of life called Ashwatha in the Hindu scriptures is traditionally considered to be one of the giant fig trees found in southern Asia. A great deal has been written on the question of proper botanical classification. Is this Ficus bengalensis? I shall spell to you. Ficus bengalensis. The banyan tree, or Ficus religiosa, the sacred people, or Bo tree under which Buddha attained illumination. Shankara, who often drives Western scholars to exasperated footnotes, does not seem to care about this question. Instead, he goes to the heart of the matter with a touch of imaginative etymology, Ashwatha. He says, "Can be derived from the three little words, a means without, shwa means tomorrow, and stha means standing. This is the tree of what will not be here tomorrow. In other words, of all created things. The universe today is not what it will be tomorrow. It changes even from instant to instant.
Your body today is not what it was yesterday, and tomorrow it will not be what it is today. Every tissue is changing, even the bones. After some decades, the body will not be around at all. Trees like people and banyan are extremely long-lived. In an ancient temple compound where you can see one still growing and spreading while the stones around it are cracked and worn with age, you feel that its roots must reach it into the beginning of time. This species of ficus also have another characteristic alluded to in this verse, what botanists call aerial roots. In some cases, the seeds germinate not in the earth but high in some other tree, such as a palm, where they can even be deposited by birds and monkeys. From there, they send out long shoots that twine around the trunk of the mother tree until they reach the ground. Then they burrow in and become true roots. We have seen this type of tree many in our village. Parasites. I have seen one banyan tree in Botanical Garden, Calcutta. Quarter mile radius. And nobody knows where is the root. Another tree I saw in the Theosophical Society in Madras. And last time while I was in India, I saw that banyan tree, that bow tree under which Buddha attained illumination. The abbot was telling me this is the third generation of that tree, which was 2,500 years ago. 2,500 years ago. The third generation. Well, many people tried to destroy it, but nobody could. The senses, Sri Krishna says, are like these aerial roots. When we yield to the clamor of the senses, we are pushing consciousness out into sensory offshoots, making them longer and longer. Finally, they reach the ground and burrow in, rooting us in the world of change. This is what the media promises. The senses will supply everything we desire for of life. Indulge your senses, they say. Don't be afraid to build your life on pleasure. If it feels good, do it. By the time a person in this country reaches the age of 20, he or she have received this message a million times. From television and the movies, from magazines, newspapers and books, and of course, from the daily example of other people. With this kind of brainwashing, is it any wonder that our lives are as shaky as leaves? The more we try to put our senses out to enjoy the world, the more we are sticking out our necks. I may be mixing metaphors, but this is an apt expression. People who are highly taste-oriented, for example, are extruding their palate farther and farther and farther, obsessed with food, always thinking about what we eat and when and where and how often. They squeeze all their consciousness into their taste buds. They are feeling the world through the palate. You will find such people very physically oriented, which means, among other things, that they get easily upset. Since they do not have much security within themselves, they try to correct their upsets by getting something from the pharmacy or the refrigerator and putting it into their mouths. Overeating is one of the most familiar illustrations of how consciousness can be concentrated on a particular sense organ, which really leaves it out on a limb. That is why Gandhi said the control of the palate is such a valuable aid to controlling the mind. If you can withdraw
consciousness at will from the sense of taste, your mind will be much less upsettable. The same can happen with any other senses. The child who grows up watching TV 4, 5, or 6 hours a day is squeezing mass of his consciousness into his eyes. Those who listen for hours on end to quadraphonic sound are putting consciousness in their ears. In this way, consciousness is a little like toothpaste. It is easy to squeeze it out, but excruciatingly difficult to get it back into the tube again. When consciousness has been extruded into the senses, not much is available where it is needed for concentration, security, sensitiveness, self-reliance, and imagination. We should be able to draw consciousness from the senses at will, the Gita says, as easily as a tortoise would draw its limbs into its shell. When we see a lot of goodies displayed in a bakery window, and the palate is clamoring for us to move closer and glue our eyes to the glass, we should be able to say, withdraw, and recall consciousness back from the palate into the core of our being. The sense organs, taste buds, nerves, and so on will be physically the same, but consciousness will not be present to activate them. Later, when we approve, say, when faced with a nutritious, tasty meal, we can send consciousness back out to the senses and enjoy our food. Eknath is very much against this good food. Good food means, you know, this sweets, and he's a vegetarian. I see advertisements for vacation cruises that proclaim our dining room is always open. After breakfast, you are not locked out until noon. You can come for a snack, come again for lunch, and still return for high tea before dinner. The variety of dishes is endless, and when you are not dining, you can float in the pool with a cocktail. The drinks are free, so you can drink as much as you like. Then at night, there are parties, movies, and gaming tables going until dawn. You never have to sleep. Now and then you get a day in a duty-free port where you can pick up a few expensive items you don't need. When the cruise is over, I imagine they even have a fleet of ambulances waiting to take you to intensive care. This kind of indulgence leaves us vulnerable to every wind that blows. He writes in a very interesting way. It is the same with anger. Angry people are usually quite self-willed. They don't have the strength to patient or turn back harsh words because self-will eats away the will. If you want to transform anger and harness it, you have to strengthen the will. When you have some detachment, the will becomes a kind of emotional barometer. You can use it to tell when storms are coming, probably more accurately than your local weatherman can predict rain. You go to your willometer in the morning, tap it a couple of times and ask, what is the weather going to be like today? If you did your best yesterday to control your senses and reduce self-will, your will has to be stronger. Then it doesn't matter. Then it doesn't much matter what external events come your way. The day is going to be clear for you. Trying to talk out anger and fear has become so commonplace today that I never mind repeating the Gita's very practical advice. Instead of analyzing your fears and resentments, putting them under a microscope, scrutinizing them from different angles, classifying them, talking about them, reading books about them, work on strengthening your will. Brooding over these problems only makes them more obsessive. But as the will gets taller, emotional problems like fear, anger and greed get smaller. When you have a strong will, if you feel lethargic, you can flex its muscles and watch your lethargy disappear. If you feel diffident, flexing the will brings self-confidence. A strong will can transform fear into fearlessness, anger into sympathy, resentment into compassion, hatred into love.
Na rupam aisya iha tathau upalibhati, na anto na chadir na cha sampratishtha, ashvattam enam shubhidham mulam, asanga shastrena dilhina chitva, tata padam tat parimargitaibhyam, yasmin gata na nivartanti bhuyaha, tameva chaddam purusham prapadye yata pravrittihi prasita purani.
The true form of this tree, its essence, beginning and end, is not perceived on this earth. Cut down this strong-rooted tree with the sharp axe of detachment. Then find the path which does not come back again. Seek that, the first cause, from which the universe came long ago.
Na rupam aisya iha tatha upalibhati.
Rupam, this tree is not visible.
What do you mean, tree is not visible?
This maya is not visible.
Can you see the maya?
But what can you see? You see the effect. Maya is the cause. So this mysterious tree is hidden. Its root above, branches below. Very mysterious.
Na rupam aisya iha tatha upalabdhati.
Through the eyes we do not perceive this tree.
Na anto,
it has no end.
Na adi, it has no beginning. Na sampratishtha,
it does not exist in between two.
Enam shubhidham mulam ashvattam.
This tree, root is very strong.
Virudham is strong. Shubhidham means extremely strong, these roots.
This ashvattha, this funny tree, which does not exist tomorrow, constantly changing. How to cut this tree?
Asanga shastrena, asanga. Asanga means
detachment, unattachment. Take this axe of detachment and cut it mercilessly.
Then what shall I do after cutting the tree?
Tata padam tat parimargitaibhyam. After cutting the tree, then seek that one who is the highest. This tree is not the goal. The goal is the origin of the tree. What is the origin of the tree?
Yato va imani bhutani jayante yena jatani jivanti yat prayanta visambhishanti tat brahma. Anandena khullimani bhutani jayanti anandena jatani jivanti ananda prayanta visambhishanti tad vijignasa svatat brahmeti.
Ananda, bliss, that is Brahman. That a whole universe originated from bliss, that blissful self, that God, Brahman. So go to the root. Why are you seeking a little bit joy here and here? Go to the source, that Krishna said.
Tata.
Then, tat padam, that feet, meaning that God, purimargitaibhyam, you should seek, you should ask for.
Yasmin gata, what happens, sir, if I reach there,
yasmin gata na punarabartanti punaha bhuyaha, you will not have to come back again. A coming and going, a recycling is going on.
Well, Swami will have to recycle, then have fun, suffer.
Birth, disease, death, frustration, marriage, divorce,
Children have gone to wrong direction, crying, weeping, wailing, financial problem, depression, deflation, inflation. All shan will cut you, will hover on you. Swamiji once made a remark, dukkha ase sukher, sukh ase. Dukkha sukh ase dukher mukut pore. Means, you have a crown made of thorn. Happiness comes in that way, you know, full. And if you try to embrace it, you will get all those thorns will prick you. Sometimes misery comes in disguise of happiness. And a little happiness, but all other things are misery. Jasmin gata nap nivartanti bhuyaha. Reaching there will be no more rebirth. Tameva cha adyam purusham. Adyam purusham. He is the supreme self, supreme purusha, prapaddi. Take refuge in that purusha. Yata pravritti prasita purani. This whole pravritti. Pravritti means desires. All these volitions originated from that source. They are very ancient. Desire is not old. You see, human body becomes old, but desire becomes young, always young. Desire does not know how to be old. A commentator says, a fisherman sets his nest to catch the fish in a lake. And he catches them. Nobody can escape. Because his net goes from one side to the other side of the lake. Big, big net. But a few fish, then they are very sneaky. They always try to move around the feet of the fisherman. You see, he is throwing net, you know, standing in the water. So those few fish move around his feet. And the fisherman cannot set net there, you see. He set net from front, and from there, you know, let it go. All fish will be caught. Are all in the net. But the few which are around the fisherman, they are not caught. They are all devotees, you see. They are all devotees of God. They always, Lord, I want your blessed feet. A God is very cannot catch them. They are very, because they took refuge in God. It's a very good illustration. You know, I enjoyed that analogy. Those who are around God. Sri Ramakrishna once mentioned, you know, Mahamaya is trapping all these fellows. But those who are around me, pointing to his disciples, Mahamaya does not touch them. They are free. They will escape from this turmoil of Maya. He said that. Those will come to the Master. Mahamaya cannot bind them. It is true. I believe it. Krishna says, Tat purimargitaibhyam. Seek the highest, aim at the highest, then you will reach the highest. So, andishtibhya sa jiggishe atma bare drushtibhya srotibhya mantibhya nididhya sitaibhya. E atma, drushtibhya, is to be realized. There is no other way. You will have to. Drushtibhya, srotibhya. How can I realize it? Here, constantly. Day in, day out, till you go to sleep, till you die, constantly hear about the Atman, talk about the Atman, study about the Atman, about the Self. Are drushtibhya srute, mantibhya, think about it, meditate on it again and again. Nididhasitibhya, meditate on it, hold on it. First listen, then think, and then meditate. Don't give up. Mind is bound to be illumined. That says the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. So anishtibhyah, it is to be searched, it is to be sought for, sought. So vijigyasitibhyah, if we have any question, ask about the Atma. Don't ask any other question. Anya vacha vimunchata, don't talk all nonsense about the world. I went to a house of a rich lady and she was showing that what type of bathroom tiles she selected. Bathroom tiles and draperies and swimming pool. These are the three things. Shrine is very poor shrine. Only talk about the self, Atma. Take instruction from the teacher and practice it. Most of the tree of life, we should remember, lies in the world within. Sri Krishna is telling us to get beneath the surface and trace our way back to our source. One school of thought speaks of this tree as an illusion because separateness is an illusion. But I would say each leaf is precious. Each individual creature deserves our respect, love and protection. So instead of talking about cutting down trees, I would rather talk about digging to the root, deep in the soil of consciousness. Meditation is the tool for digging. I don't know if we have ever had to dig up an old established tree. When the surface of the ground is knotted with thick, hardened roots, it can be painfully difficult to break through. Similarly, for many years in meditation, we have to dig hard to break through the crusted strata of samskaras we have accumulated over the years, or from the Hindu and Buddhist perspective, over many lives. To do this, we have to keep a sharp edge on our meditation. Like any tool, it must be kept in good condition. If it is not used for a week, even for a day, it will get rusty. Sometimes the surface level of consciousness is soft loam, easy digging for the first 12 inches or so. You are still on the surface. But because the blade of your shovel is turning over soil, you say, this is easy, it is not. Isn't meditation great? Then you strike something hard and impenetrable. Your hands sting from the shock and your arms ache. That is the first stratum of bedrock, a dense rock-eared layer of tamas, sheer resistance. One of the most common signs of hitting this layer is that you find yourself overcome by waves of sleep in meditation. It is very much like your shovel striking a rock. You are saying, in effect, my shovel is getting blunted and my arms are tired. Why not stop digging and have a snooze? It is extremely important not to yield to this inclination right from the first days of meditation. These are problems that continue for years. We have a lot of strata of dig through, and those who do not learn to deal with sleep in the early stages have a terribly difficult time later on. Sri Ramakrishna, I believe, described the role the gunas play in this. Sattva, Rajas and Tamas have to come on stage. Otherwise, life's drama cannot be enacted. Tamas, he says, is the rock of resistance. This is a reassuring description. Without a rock, how can you develop your digging arm? Rajas, of course, a hard, energetic, sustained digging, and Sattva is the mastery that comes when you have overcome tamas, deep in consciousness, and are making steady progress. All right, you can ask me questions.
See, Purushottam, it is a mystery. I shall explain this mystery of Purushottam. What does it mean? Krishna, when Arjuna will ask, he Purushottam.
Try to see this way. Kshara and Akshara. This Shakti, Maya, with the goodness. Here is with form, name and form. Here is Brahman, without name, without form. And in between comes Purushottam. What do you mean, Purushottama Swami? He is both. He is Shagun, he is Nirgun. That mystery Krishna will explain in this chapter. In the 9th chapter, Krishna mentioned, Arjuna says, 9th or 10th chapter, Swayameva Vetha Purushottama. You know only about yourself. How is the mystery? How a person